If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Hopeful Hints, hosted by Dr. Tara, guides and supports those on the often challenging and isolating journey of women's health concerns and infertility. There's a particularly powerful episode that you should check out called All Things Endometriosis, which dives deep into understanding the condition to help the many women who suffer from endometriosis and have no idea they have it, and healthcare providers who are uneducated about it, making the diagnosis process so difficult. Check out Hopeful Hints on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Highway to Health. I'm Jeremy Quinby. This is episode 129 of the podcast. If you're new to the show, I want to welcome you. Highway to Health is your place for trusted health guidance and support. Whether you're looking to improve your health or just seeking ways to stay well, we're here for you. This growing community is on a mission to improve our state of being and experience together on the planet. I started this podcast as a way to explore ways to well-being and to improve the dialogue about a more integrative approach to care. Real collaboration and better communication combined with education are the keys to improving health outcomes and the experience for everyone involved. So my guest for today is another of my colleague collaborators. I've been fortunate enough to treat her babies as well, who are fast growing up before my eyes. And this is the third episode of our series on birth, newborn, and maternal care. In the last episode, I talked to Chris McCloskey, and she shared her experience over the past three decades as a midwife, which covered a lot of the basics of why having a midwife can be so beneficial. And I asked Tanya to join this conversation because of her unique perspective, coming to midwifery after working in her home country of Peru and working with a number of different communities here in New York City. She's primarily a home birth midwife and has some incredible wisdom to share about birthing instinct, community of care, and respect for this incredible intimate experience that she feels blessed to get to share with families. Please enjoy my conversation with Tanya Zarulnik. One of the things I'm realizing is that of all the conversations that we've had together, I've never really asked about where you started your practice, where you did your training. You grew up in Lima, in the city?
I grew up in Lima, yeah. Lima, Peru. Yes, so hence my accent.
Yeah.
And I did my midwifery program there. So I graduated as a bachelor's in midwifery there when I was 23 years old. I always felt that I needed something else. I liked the work when I worked in the hospital because I worked there for a couple of years. But I just felt like the hospital was not the end for me. And I wanted to search for something different. I found a way to come here. I came here through an exchange program that allowed me to be in the U.S. for a year. So I decided to learn what was going on with midwifery here in the U.S. I remember I first became certified as a Lamaze childbirth educator.
Oh, you did?
And I did, yes. So I kind of like, even though I was already a midwife, when I came here, I decided to start fresh and start from the bottom up. So I became a childbirth educator. Then I got certified as a doula. And as a doula, I was able to volunteer at a hospital here. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm definitely not going to a hospital here. In one of the workshops, I heard about the home birth movement, and I was like, well, hold on, let me get more into that, because I never knew that was really an option as a midwife. You know, I did my training in hospital, and Peru being a third world country, low resources, we had a very high maternal mortality rate. So they always talk about you have to be in the hospital to give birth, right? So when I heard that, I was like, okay, I need to explore more and learn more about this. And I reached out to some of the homebred midwives here in the city, and one of them decided to take me on and say, well, you're already a midwife, you're a doula, fine, come assist me at births and you can be a doula for my clients. So I started doing that. And it was really amazing because the first ever home birth I went to, and this was after having worked at a hospital and delivering or catching 150 babies, the very first home birth I went to, I cried. Like, I was like...
Is that right?
That was like, this is it. Like, it was not only amazing to find the, you know, like this privacy, intimacy, primal moment.
Yeah.
And I think it was also for me, tears of joy that I found what I want to do, you know? So it was really, eye-opening, and that's what led me to this path.
Yeah. What was your experience in the hospital system like that turned you off, I guess, in Peru? Is it different to you than your experience has been when you're in hospitals in the US?
Yes, I know. So the hospital I worked at and trained at in Peru, actually they have back then, I don't know now because it's been quite a few years, but back then they had a low cesarean section rate. So they really promote vaginal birth. I'm not going to say completely natural because there were still inductions happening and all that, okay. But vaginal birth. So that was really helpful for my training, for like really, being convincing me that, yeah, women can give birth vaginally, even though we have to intervene. And that was the part that I was just not okay with. Why do we always have to intervene? Why do we, you know, and it was just that. And it was like, you know, people having conversations when somebody's like giving birth and everybody's like doing their own thing. And I'm like, hold on, this should be a better moment for the person giving birth, you know?
Yeah.
And so those were the things that it just made me feel like I don't want to see like all these other midwives here and just be talking about their own businesses while somebody else is giving birth. And
right.
I don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
So I had the motivation to look something that was also still vaginal birth, but just something definitely where there was privacy.
Yeah.
And when I came here to the U.S., I remember the first birth I attended as a doula in the hospital, this woman had just arrived, and she was like, I think 1 or 3 centimeters dilated, no more than that. And then all of a sudden the resident came and said, so we're going to do a C-section. And then in my mind, I was like, hold on, like, she just got here. I know her water broke maybe a few hours ago, but like, why do a C-section? You know, like, she's technically not even in labor. Like, so that was really shocking. And then after that, I saw many other births happen in the hospital where in my mind, I was like, hold on. I saw this back in Peru, and that type of labor still ended up in a vaginal birth. Why is it ended up in a C-section here?
Yeah.
You know, so that was like, okay, I need to run away from this place. Like, I just couldn't. And it was also very difficult to connect with people. Like, when you're a doula that the hospital is providing, you're meeting the person right there at that moment.
Right.
So some people don't even know what a doula is. And so it was hard to really connect to the people and make them understand that I was there to advocate for them. It was easy for me to connect with Hispanic people because I'm Hispanic, you know, but even then it was just, I couldn't convince them of not having a C-section. I couldn't convince them on saying, hey, you can say no and we can try different things. You know, they felt that they were under the supervision of the doctor and the doctor made the decisions, you know?
So. It's interesting because you and I have both worked in New York, we work with a population of people that are basically from all over the world. I mean, it's different than a lot of places that you might work. I think probably Miami and LA and, you know, there's probably some other places on the West Coast that are like that. But one of the things that I've noticed in working with new mothers is that they tend to be much more holistic minded in general, coming from just about anywhere else, whether it's South America or Europe or Africa. It's like they have a little bit more of that mindset, it seems like. So they gravitate to people like us, you know, whereas I wonder, I'm sort of curious, maybe if we can talk a little bit about, get into the populations of people that we tend to work with, because I know you work with a lot of mothers and families in the Orthodox community in New York, Jewish Orthodox. And so, yes. Like, it's interesting to see, like, how they seek, you know, our kind of care, where a lot, and part of the reason I'm doing this series in the first place is because I think a lot of people don't realize the kinds of resources that are available to them in our kind of way of thinking about care.
Yeah, and that's very true. When I never thought I would work with the Jewish community, quite honestly, like, you know, but I think, like you said, there's something that connects us, and maybe not, you know, not necessarily cultural, but
right.
But it's the reasoning behind it, and you know, they or at least the part of the population that I've worked with look at birth and pregnancy like, this is what my body is meant to do, and so why should I seek help when my body doesn't really need help? Like, and quite honestly, I just go there to really put on my hands, because most of these women don't even need any guidance. They, you know, I always tell this story. This one person called me and said, my water just broke and you need to come. And I said, well, hold on, are you having contractions? She's like, no, but you need to come. And I was like, okay, you know better than me, because you've done this three other times. And I got there and she was pushing already, you know. So I was like, okay, I'm just here to put my hands. And so they have this knowledge of their bodies that I can do this, you know. And
does it get passed down between like the generations too, or is there a lot of information being shared?
That's a good question, because depending on the community, some of them don't really tell the other children that they're expecting. You know, it's just like, oh, all of a sudden there's a new baby at home. But I do have found the new, like the younger women that are coming to me from the community are, you know, they will tell me my mom had a home birth, or I was present at her home birth, mm-hmm. you know, and of course I know that I'm having a home birth this time, you know, so they're just very confident because they saw it, they attended, they've been there. And so I think, again, I think religiously also, you know, they're giving this wisdom, this knowledge that they are there to give birth to new life, right? And mm-hmm. so that's just how they grow thinking, and it just becomes something very natural to them. No questioning behind it.
Right. And if you think about the whole concept of birth, like, We've come to take a little bit of this stuff for granted. You clearly haven't, because you're involved all the time, and you've witnessed the miracle of everything that goes on. But it is a spiritual, you know, thing that goes on, bringing life into the world. I mean, it's got to be just one of the most powerful things, which is, I'm sure, a little bit of an addiction that you have. You know, you have to keep kind of pushing into.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I just thinking about part of the reason I was asking the question about, you know, does this information get passed on in Orthodox communities? Because my wife's family is, you know, they're Russian Jews. Her mom's actually not Russian. She's Ukrainian. And her lineage was German, but they all ended up in Moscow together. And at the time, so she's like 73 now or something like that. But even when she was first having her, you know, my brother-in-law was the first one that was born, they would hide the pregnancies from everybody in the community. That was like a part. I mean, I'm sure this happens in other places in the world, but just to think that, you know, we're talking about like the early 70s, they're still hiding the fact that they're going to conceive a child. It seems crazy to me.
Yeah. No, I think it's real still in some of the communities, and some others is still more widely discussed. But yeah, it's so interesting how culturally there's this, and I don't even know if it's taboo. I wouldn't call it taboo. It's just the culture, right? And I think I going back to what you were saying, being in New York just makes us exposed to all these different cultures. You learn the rules under which culture express a certain way, right? And so, like I said, I never thought I would end up working with the Jewish community at all. And but I've also been happy that they have been open to teaching me, you know, things about their culture and why the husband does this during the birth and why she does this during the birth, right? And so it's been really interesting, and I've been very happy to be part of this community for sure.
Are they interested in your being Peruvian at all?
You know, it's very interesting. The very first client, Orthodox Jew that hired me years later after, you know, after I have caught five of her babies, I said, why did you hire me the first time? I said, because I know there are other midwives that were working in this community for a long time. And she said, we like your warmth. We like that you had that warmth that I think comes from you being from a Hispanic heritage. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So some of them are familiar with that. I mean, I think they realize I'm Hispanic, or I mention it at some point. I think they're familiar with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that is, I mean, I always think about how we draw each other together in New York, because I end up finding that, you know, there are certain groups of people I end up, for whatever reason, like I've had big groups of Germans that I've worked with. I've got a group of Swedish people that I work with. I have a lot of Latin people from, you know, Dominican Republic and Puerto Rican, and I have a few friends from Peru actually, and Haiti, and it's like, and Trinidad. there's something about, and I think maybe because I'm from the Midwest and I'm not a native New Yorker, somehow we end up sort of, you know, and even native New Yorkers seem very drawn to people from the Midwest. It's kind of a funny thing the way we all kind of find each other in that way, and that's that melting pot part of New York is like such a fun part, I think, of having a private practice like that.
Totally. Yes, I agree.
So, but speaking of private practices, so going back into your story when you were first, you know, starting in New York, what was the leap that you had to make going from hospitals to starting this private practice?
Well, first of all, I wasn't going to stay in the U.S. I only came for 1 year, remember? But then I was given the opportunity through this exchange program to stay for a second year, which I did, and definitely immerse myself more into home births and exclusively helping these other home birth midwives. And initially, my idea, and I even took a business class, was to start a birth center in Peru, which then I learned that there was already a birth center in Lima. And it's just so interesting. That birthing center had existed while I was in college, and I never knew about this place. And again, right, it's kind of like when you don't know your options, you just really don't know that is there, you know? And maybe now with social media, this place is more well known. But like, I thought I was going to be the first one bringing, you know, a birth center into Lima. Right. And then I found out that I wasn't. But anyway, that was my plan. I was like, I'm sure there's need for more, right? For more birthing centers. So that was going to be my plan. And then I met my husband. And of course, you know, him being American, I ended up staying here. Because I had to transfer credits and become a resident of this country, it took a few years. I had to take my exam to get my license and all that. So it really was a 4-year journey until I finally got my license to work here. But in the meantime, I kept working with this other home birth midwife. So it was really a whole like mentorship program that she gave me during those 4 years. So I really took advantage of that as much as I could. And really, when I started my practice, I felt completely confident because, you know, you do, even though I have had that background of working in the hospital, it's very different when you're at home because you're there by yourself, right? In the hospital, you have the nurse that draws blood or starts an IV. You have the pediatrician who is going to respond to any emergencies, or you have the OB that supervises and, you know, is on call if there's an emergency. When you're at home, you are by yourself. And I bring an assistant with me, but still, you know, so I had to develop new skills, which was how do I care for the newborn if there's an emergency? And okay, I need to start that IV and carry all these medications with me if there's an emergency. And you need to recognize prior to things getting complicated, you need to recognize when you make that call to go to the hospital before things get complicated at home, right? So those were new things that I needed to learn. And so by the term of the end of those 4 years, I felt that I was pretty confident to be by myself at that point.
So I'm curious, you're making me wonder, like, I know we've talked a little bit about some of this stuff because you have to bring a fair amount of stuff with you when you do house calls. What do you have, like kind of the old school doctor bag that you kind of bring with you, or what you have it there with you? Okay. So anybody who might want to check this out on YouTube to watch, oh, it is totally.
And in fact, you know, this is kind of like, I copied the midwife, the Holmberg midwife that I mentor from. Yep. She had that, and I just love that bag so much. When I started my practice, I'm like, I have to have it.
You know? Yep.
So
is that the only thing? Is that, or do you carry even more than that?
So that's kind of like my everyday bag, but I bring a whole huge backpack, holds everything from oxygen tank to IV stuff and homeopathy and Rebozo. The birth pool is, if they get the birth pool from me, it gets delivered to them at 37 weeks. So I deliver it to them at 37 weeks. And so that they have it all set the day of the birth. But really, it's the pool, it comes down to preference, for example. Some people want to have a pool, especially first timers. They want to have that as a comfort measure tool. And if you really want to know about Orthodox people, most of them actually don't even have a pool. They don't want the pool. They just know they can do it naturally. When it comes to Orthodox people, usually the husband is not present. You know, there's got to be this kind of like separation, this privacy for the woman. You know, she's usually covered. So they can either choose to have a pool or not. And we just have the husband kind of like behind the door waiting to hear the news. So it's been actually pretty cool to be exposed to all these different, you know, cultures and just gain all this insight, because this is like one of the most intimate moments, right?
It's true. And also just kind of going back to what you've learned from how the Orthodox women tend to know sort of what the process is, just sort of how this, you know, especially being in a place like New York, you must kind of have a lot of new insights that you get from working with different cultures. Like why does this work in this culture and it doesn't work in this culture, kind of thing. And I know that for you, like, instinct is a big part of this process. So, you know, is that something that you maybe that, you know, maybe we can link to the cultural part of it? Is that something that's brought up more in certain cultures? Because I feel like a lot of my Latin friends, you know, they're much more on that instinct, you know, thing than some of my, like, you know, Midwestern friends for sure. And also, you know, there's this really interesting study that I saw done one time about, you know, just how different cultures relate to one another and just how much more Latin culture tends to, like, use physical touch as like a way of expressing and communicating. Like, there was I remember the study showed that, like, Puerto Ricans touched each other like an average of 200 times an hour, whereas like Americans touch each other like 4 times an hour or something. You know, just goes to show, like, that's that kind of connection. And I think what you get from being sort of physically close like that means that your physical body is a you know a bigger player in terms of, like, you know, your antenna to the world. You're really, it's not so cerebral. It's actually a much more physical thing. So the instant, and that's where, you know, I'm a physical person, obviously. This is what I do for my every day. So I think, yeah. I've always thought my instinct comes, you know, sometimes from just being so physically connected too.
No, I think it's very true. I think we're all influenced by the culture we live in. For example, the Hispanic community I work with is a lot of these communities are, you know, low income communities that don't have much, right. But they just have their own inherent knowledge of their bodies and they know they can do it. And I recently have a couple And it was like the sweetest because she had had two hospital births. And for this one, she's like, Tanya, there's no way I'm going to the hospital this time. I just cannot put myself to that again. And that was a little concern. He had never had an experience hearing from home birth, actually, which was very interesting, knowing that he was coming, you know, from a Hispanic country. But still, he was open to it. And the day of the birth, you know, this is someone who had not done a childbirth class or anything. But all he did is when she starts pushing, he just came next to her, hold her hand and said, Mommy, you can do this. You know you can do it. Just let your body do it. You know, and like Corey, my assistant, and I, we just look at each other and we're like, this is like the sweetest. Like, he just knew exactly what to do at that moment. He knew what she needed at that moment,
Yeah. You
know. And even though she had two doulas that had volunteered to be at her birth, she just, once the husband hold her hand, she just knew that she could do it, and she did it, you know. Yeah. And so that just letting go. And I always tell people, the one thing we cannot control is labor and birth. You can have a birth plan.
Yeah.
You can have all these ideas. You can have all these wishes, dreams for your birth. But ultimately, birth, I put it this way, it's like a game board where there's two players,
right.
Baby and the pregnant person,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the number one player, the pregnant person, can be all into doing these things, these moves, but if the baby is not in sync with that, sometimes things can deviate from that. We need to be open to that. We need to let go of us trying to control labor, because I think that's also when sometimes we put a little bit of a challenge, right?
Yeah. You and I have talked about this before too. It's like there's so much about this process that's managing expectation and it is mindset. And it kind of makes me, you know, as we're talking about like the difference between industrialized nations and the people, right. And people who come from places where they don't have all these things available to them. I think that is kind of where instinct comes from. Whereas in an industrialized, you know, nation, I think sometimes we're so used to thinking that like someone needs to solve this problem for me, you know, when really, and like in, as you're saying, we're talking about two people right now. It's the mom and the baby, and there's no machine or, you know, we're trying to speed this process up in the way that we think we can, you know, shortcut things in Western society. But you can't, you know, Pitocin has its place in delivery sometimes, but it's way overused. We know that. And that's something that helps for contractions for anyone who doesn't know the term. But there are lots of things like that where we've forceps deliveries and all these other things that we've tried to, you know, use something mechanical to speed up a natural process. And the natural process is going to happen. And it's for some situations, it's much more challenging. And there are some situations in which medical intervention does save a life.
Yeah.
But we're so used to thinking that the medical solutions should solve, you know, everything about childbirth, which just cannot.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's this misconception overall that if you do home birth, it's because you're opposed to a hospital. And I think that is really not true. I mean, we're opposed to the overdoing of hospitals on pregnancy and birth,
yeah.
Right? But we understand and we're happy that there is that solution when it's needed,
yeah.
When it's truly needed. You know, unfortunately, it's kind of the opposite these days, right? Where we think the norm should be that everything should happen always in a hospital. And why would you do a home birth? Like, mm-hmm. That's just crazy. I think I'm going to say lately more people have become more aware. I think, again, thanks to social media, have become more aware of what their options are. And they're at least trying to educate themselves better, inform themselves of what are the options so that, you know, it's not one of those things where like, oh, I wish I knew this when I had, mm-hmm. My babies, right? And I hear that now sometimes, right? But it's like, oh, I will have totally had a baby at home, you know?
So let's talk about pregnant moms' bodies. You know, the thing that I think we don't coach well enough, and I know you do, but and I've been involved in prenatal, you know, movement work, and I know I've had to study quite a bit to understand like what happens during the different phases of pregnancy so that I know kind of how to pace with, you know, what their movement should look like through different trimesters and that kind of stuff. But that I know that that's a big piece for you as far as what is going to create a successful outcome for pregnancy. Is that true?
Well, I think moving, it's so crucial during the pregnancy and during the labor, especially at home.
Yes.
We're not, there's not going to be like a bed and an epidural and then see you later when you're ready to push. It's like, oh no, we're making this happen by moving, yeah. Right? Yeah. And cardiovascular exercise is so great in general, whether you're pregnant or not, right? Like it's just so great. And I think what is also happening these days is that, again, because we're in an industrialized civilization, it's, you know, we're sitting in front of a computer, we're sitting on the couch watching TV, we're sitting for long periods of time.
Yeah.
I once had a client whose husband, actually they were both Peruvian, and the husband was like, I don't understand why these days women need doulas and, you know, to give birth. Back in my country, the women in the fields just go work, they're feeling the contractions, they squat down, they have their baby, and they just walk back home with their baby and rest.
Right.
And I said to him, yes, that is true. And I know that happens because I've heard that story too when I used to live in Peru. But you think those women are not sitting in front of a computer all day. They're in the fields working, squatting, stretching, you know, harvesting the fruit. Like, and so the movement of their bodies just allow them to have babies in optimal presentations. And they build the endurance also, right? So I always compare labor with a marathon. And I think many of us do, where it's like you need to prepare your body. So basically throughout the pregnancy, you're doing that preparation.
Right.
And I wouldn't put someone who is pregnant, I wouldn't tell them, oh, you need to start jogging, you need to start swimming, when they've never done that kind of exercise before.
Right.
You know, but it would be more like, go for a walk. Make sure you're walking 30 minutes at least three times a week. Maybe go for a brisk walk. And those things that are just going to really be more flexible during the labor, because we need a lot of that. And, you know, I think, again, the sitting down for so long is also making our bodies tighter, mm-hmm. Which favors also malpositions. And, you know, you hear more people saying, I need to go see a chiropractor. Maybe it's a good idea. I need to see an acupuncturist. Maybe it's a good idea. And I do think that it's a good idea. You know, if somebody has the option of doing it, I know unfortunately it's not something that is covered by insurance, even though it should, at least when you're pregnant.
Right, I know.
Right. But if you have the opportunity, I think it's something that I recommend. And and, you know, there's like places like Spinning Babies that would also give a whole list of recommendations of what daily activities to do to kind of like simulate being on the field, right? So I tell my clients, like, maybe set your timer that at a certain time it tells you go to the fields and just like move and stretch. Or if you work from home, have different stations to work where you're standing, maybe you're squatting, maybe you are, you know, sitting for a short period of time. And so just to allow that mobility of your body.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's, I mean, and I, because I studied sort of prenatal training, with you know, having worked with new mothers for a while, and then I also got to work with a lot of the babies afterwards. So it was a very, you know, unique situation for me. But I always just thought about it very similar to that. You know, I think basically, you know, the expecting mother needs to have strong legs. They need to have some kind of core engagement and some mobility work, but you don't want to overstretch because of the you know, the relaxin that loosens the joints. So there's certain kinds of things, and I think massage. I mean, I just think massage it's so helpful because mothers just don't get a chance, you know, when they're pregnant, to sort of like have that circulation moved back up through their legs, where there's a lot of pressure that's holding your vascular system down so that we don't end up with a lot of vascular issues in our legs. And a lot of this is about recovery too. I mean, I just see that the women who have done a little extra work during their pregnancies basically have recovered a lot faster. And also they've had easier deliveries, frankly. You know, they were able to sort of like, you know, manage what was going on, because it's a challenging thing to go through. The physical act of having the baby is one of the things that's so taxing, you know, energetically, that if you've done some things to sort of, you know, challenge your body, you've brought up a lot of kind of immune responses that are going to help your recovery and also not overly tax your system, you know, during the labor and delivery part.
Correct. No, that's totally, like, that's what I was saying. It helps you build endurance, right? So it's kind of like training towards the day of the marathon. And so when the marathon comes, your body, your muscles who have memory, remember, yeah. Oh, yes, I need to run like this and all that. And so, you know, it's just harder when you have people that don't move much, whether it's because they don't have the time or it's never been part of their lives, and they have a much harder time. And even when they come to my office, I'm in the third floor, they're like, oh my God, you know, I can't do this anymore. And I'm like, well, I'm going to be making you do this during the labor, so let's start getting used to this. So there's that too.
So are there anything specifically that somebody has already set themselves on wanting to do a home birth? Are there any extra things that make that situation better for them? Are there in certain terms of support, like a doula? Is that something that you always recommend?
Yes. Okay. Definitely. I'm a big fan of doulas, and especially if it's the first baby. We don't know how long the birth is going to be. And, you know, I've had people that tell me, well, I think my husband will be a good doula. And I'm like, well, but then the husband is just terrified. As, you know? And then the husband feels so relieved when the doula arrives. Yeah. So I always also put it this way, because I think every person brings a new energy into the picture. So when the labor starts and things are slow, it's just a couple together, right? And I tell them, like, ignore it for as long as you can and do have a project and do things together. And then when things start to get uncomfortable and this person is going to get tired of the husband and be like, sorry, you're not maybe being that helpful anymore. We need, you know, a new kind of energy. Then the doula comes in and, you know, offers this comfort to cope with the discomfort, right? Yeah. And
they can be comforting to the husband too.
Exactly. Oh, 100%. And sometimes you've had these kind of labors where the person has had these like practice pre-labor contractions for 2 nights and they're not really sleeping that well. So even, you know, the partner is also tired. And sometimes I tell the partners, go take a nap because we're really going to need you when the pushing stage happens. Mm-hmm. So let's make sure you also get some rest, right? And so and the doula kind of like holds the space together at that moment where maybe the partner is resting and then the birthing person is with the doula. And then I come when we're it looks like things are getting more active and more intense, because that's when I do need to monitor the baby and make sure the progress of the labor is you know, within normal. And so then I bring this new energy, right? Where it's like, okay, you know, if your midwife is coming, you know that things are progressing, right? Yeah. And then as we get into the transition pushing period, my birth assistant comes. So I always tell everybody, when you see my birth assistant, she's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, if you see her walking in, you know there's a baby coming, right? Yeah, so it's just, I think it just kind of brings, again, new energy into the picture. And so it's fun to have that dynamic, and it helps, because I also cannot be there for 24 hours.
Right.
Because when you really need me, I don't want to be super tired. Yes, there are certain labors that are challenging and require me to be there for a long period of time.
Yeah.
But for the most part, most labors, you know, you're not going to have someone with you when you're 1 or 2 centimeters dilated. Not that I will check them, but I can just tell if your contractions are coming 20 minutes apart, you're probably 1 centimeter dilated, yeah. Right? And so doulas, there's been many studies that have shown that doulas can contribute to a good outcome for the birth, reduce the chances of C-sections, promote good recovery also after the birth, help people move, right? All these things, there's all these good benefits to having a doula, and there's different ways of finding a doula. You know, especially here in the city, there's many, many doulas, and, you know, I like working with some doulas, but they don't have to hire my doulas, but there's got to be some chemistry with the doula for sure, because it's, again, it's going to be the one protecting that space, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, I tell my first time pregnant people, you ideally should have a doula for sure.
Because it seems like a big part of what you're also doing is, like you're saying, you're managing energy, you're managing the fatigue factor for everybody involved. And yeah. In a hospital situation, you don't always know at what point in the shift a nurse is at, or, you know, I mean, I think I know a few people who work in birthing centers, and that's a little bit better. They're doing a lot of rotations. I treat quite a bit of people in health. So I hear about how they space their weeks off, so that I know that they get a lot of rest. And I know that you also have to kind of plan for this too. So it's like a big part of your career to actually be managing energy kind of constantly.
Oh, for sure. And that's why, you know, I need to make sure I recharge myself in between births. And, you know, whether it is going out of the city, whether it's getting some body therapies, all of that has really helped me accomplish that, where I know I can go from one birth to another, having had that little break. That really makes me feel like, okay, I'm good to go, you know?
Yeah. That's so awesome. I wish I would have, you know, known more about this. We had to kind of do a scheduled C-section for my daughter, which was, you know, my wife had a C-section previously. So we kind of did everything we could leading up to it and tried for a VBAC. But, you know, that whole piece of actually being able to have this like quiet at home, intimate situation is something that I just wish we could have had more of.
That's also the other part, you know, where after they've given birth, and it's what comes after, which is like being on your bed with your baby.
I know.
And, you know, it's like, and, you know, especially in those long labors, you have people telling, I don't know when the baby comes, I'm going to be so tired. How am I even going to push this baby out? And, you know, because there's all these nice harmony of hormones working on your body, you do get that energy to push your baby out. And then you fall in love with your baby as soon as you see your baby, and you forget all the hours where you were just like, there's no way I can do this, right? Yeah. Like, and so you have your baby, you're there in your bed. And I have a friend who once told me, I will have just had a home birth the next time to avoid having the nurses coming every 4 hours to take my blood pressure and see if I was feeding my baby. Of course I'm feeding my baby.
So you true. Know?
So that's, you know, and of course, during the prenatal visits, because I think that's also makes a big difference, is our prenatal visits are, you know, 45 minutes to an hour long, because a very important component of the visits is education, right? So it's not just like, hey, measuring your belly, listen to the baby and all that. It's just, let's talk about what's going to happen postpartum. Let's talk about what's going to happen with breastfeeding. Let's talk about nutrition. Let's talk about all these things.
Yeah.
And it's just a time where they get to share their concerns, their birth plans. They ask all their questions. And we develop this relationship, right? It's not just because I'm your midwife, you're going to do everything that I say. No, I want you to trust that if I'm saying this is because I know that you need it medically, and that I would not force you to do something that I know you don't want me to do, because we have already discussed that ahead of time.
Yeah.
Right. And so that is also very, very important for prior to having a home birth. We all need to be in the same page, even the partner as well.
Yeah, and just the arc, I feel like, of like, you know this person's whole story. So when it comes to like postnatal support, you know exactly what's going on. If they have any postpartum issues going on, you know exactly what went on, and you've gotten kind of, you know, intermittently gotten to see them throughout the course of their pregnancy for bigger chunks of time than a lot of health professionals get to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And some of my clients were like, what are we going to do now? You know, can we just come and visit you?
Like, well, you're welcome. You and I both have this, you know, similar thing. Like, I know your girls and your husband and everybody at this point, because, and your dog, because that's the kind of, I mean, in a way that probably you and I both wanted to have those kinds of practices, right? That environment of the clinic was not the, you know, didn't suit us as well, because I wanted to have these sort of intimate relationships with people. And I just, you know, I enjoy that. I enjoy getting to watch your girls grow up and see them on a regular basis, you know, those kinds of things. And they're comfortable with me like that. And you probably have that with like some of the kids, you know, the babies that you've delivered, right?
You know, yeah, so. It's actually funny because I think, I don't know if this is me being biased, but I feel that when people come with their toddlers, and if that has been the toddler that I had, they feel very comfortable at home. You know, they just come and they start asking me questions. And then if it's a toddler that was born in the hospital, the baby doesn't know me, it's like, you know, first looks at me like it's not familiar with me. Eventually they warm up to me. But yeah, those that, you know, those babies only saw me the first 6 weeks of life. But I don't know, for some reason, there's just this familiarity and they feel very comfortable when they re-meet me, you know, a couple years later for the other baby.
Yeah. I mean, even I have a good friend who's, he and his wife, I when I was first starting to do massage, I offered them a deal so that I could do some prenatal massage because I really wanted to learn how to do it. And so she came to see me every week of her pregnancy almost. And so that was their first. They had three. I worked with her through the second pregnancy as well. And then I had moved to New York. But it was interesting because she's 25 now, the one that I worked with who was prenatal. And but I didn't work with babies at that point. But she, I think somehow because she just got so used to my voice. Yeah. She was so comfortable with me, even when I was, you know, only coming home, you know, coming back to Minnesota to visit once in a while, she would get really excited about hearing about me coming. It was such a strange thing. And it just goes to show like how being involved and, you know, babies do pick up a lot of energy and a lot of information, the sound and all that stuff. So, she actually works for one of my friend's sisters now. And I just saw her a couple of weeks ago, because I stopped in there to say hi. I didn't know she was going to be working there. And she was just like, come up and give me a hug. And it's like such a strange, like full circle moment to have, you know, with those kinds of people that we've, you know, we have an impact in those kinds of ways. And it just kind of goes to show like how, you know, there's something about that, the intimacy of what we, of the way that we work that I think really does keep us bonded in some ways.
Yeah. And I think really is what, when you're pregnant, it's what you deserve. You want to be, it's such a special moment in your life. And whether you're feeling very vulnerable or having morning sickness or having the best pregnancy, you just want to be able to sit down and talk to someone about all the changes that you're going through your body and, you know, the fears, the concerns, all these emotions, all of that. Yeah. You want to have that conversation. And I think that having that kind of prenatal care, postpartum care, just really makes a big difference. Yeah. The continuity of care, seeing that same person that knows you and knows everything about you. Sometimes when the lab calls me because they need to ask something about a sample I send, they're like, patient this, date of birth. I'm like, I know everything about that person. You know, where did I mess up? Like, you don't need to give me more details. I know my clients. I know their stories, you know? And so you know, like I can look back at all the home births I've done and you asked me about the birth of that person 10 years ago. I remember every detail about birth.
I know. It's interesting there's something about that point too. I mean, I oftentimes will remember like exactly, like I actually remember what Sierra looked like as baby because I treated her, you know, and it's like, there's something that gets ingrained in your body, you know, and in your mind for what that person looked like, even as their body grows, you just, you can still kind of remember that moment. There's something that it just goes to show that there's something like really, really important going on. And that, and, you know, when you're working with, you know, this new life too.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think, you know, if the right hormones are in place, it creates this imprint, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Well, thank you, Tanya, so much for doing this with me. I'm like, I get excited now even just thinking about working with the babies again.
No, it's been my pleasure, and I'm glad we had this short time to talk. You know, we could talk for many more hours,
but
you know, I know you got to keep it short. So thank you for inviting me, and it's been a pleasure.
And we'll put up any, if anyone's interested in kind of, if you're in New York City and you're interested in your services, we'll have a link to your page so people can, and we'll have a lot of stuff up on highway2.health too, that will be your bio and all the links there as well.
Awesome. Sounds
all great. Right. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye, Jeremy.
Tanya Zarulnik, folks. I'm reminded again of how important support is in this process and how fortunate I am to be part of this, especially as a man. The majority of care providers around pre- and postpartum care and birth are women, and their dedication continues to astound me. Because of my good fortune of being invited to be part of this care community, I like to encourage expecting fathers to get involved as much as possible in education and the experience as you can. It's a special moment that you will draw from for the rest of your life. Let me know what you thought of this topic and conversation. You can reach me anytime at jeremy@highway2.health. And don't forget to give us some stars on the app that you're listening to so that more people can find us and get resource. And even better, write a short note and let others know about the insight you're getting from this podcast. Thanks for listening and for all that you do. Be good to yourself, be kind to each other, and take care of your planet. Be well, my friends.
If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Hopeful Hints, hosted by Dr. Tara, guides and supports those on the often challenging and isolating journey of women's health concerns and infertility. There's a particularly powerful episode that you should check out called All Things Endometriosis, which dives deep into understanding the condition to help the many women who suffer from endometriosis and have no idea they have it, and healthcare providers who are uneducated about it, making the diagnosis process so difficult. Check out Hopeful Hints on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.